Welcome to Bounce Back. My name is Yvonne Fletcher from NY Events, and you're listening into DRN1. Bounce Back's a fun little talkback show, and today I have, oh my gosh, I don't even know, can I say comedian, TV show presenter, you've got a lot of labels. It's Alexander Sacosta. Hi, Alexander. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me. Pleasure to be here. Big fan of the show.
Oh, you're a sweetheart. Thank you so much. Alexander, I've got lots of questions for you. Mm-hmm. How about we start from the very beginning, but where did your journey start in the arts?
In the arts. It's very interesting because I was one of those children that was like always performing, you know, those children that like at Christmas and at Easter and every time, you know, all the religious holidays would do like performances with my family and my cousins, and we put on little shows and all those things. And then when I was younger, I did dancing and then drama and all those things. And then when I got to high school, I didn't really have the opportunity to do it as much. And I really wanted to do it. And then when I got to uni, I really wanted to do it again. And that's when I started doing creative arts as a bachelor's alongside my law degree. And then after uni is when I fully jumped in and was like, all creative arts.
Oh, wow. So are you a
qualified creative artist? Yes. Yes, I am.
I know that. But, what about law? Where did you go with that then?
It's so interesting because I guess so many of us, we move into degrees because we think like, oh, that'd be something sensible to study, like a Bachelor of Laws or a Bachelor of Engineering or a Bachelor of Medicine. These are the kind of like pinnacle degrees. You're like, oh, yes. But then when you say it, people are like, ooh, law, like that. And they still do that now. But when you're doing it, you're kind of, you put that pressure on yourself to do it because you feel like, oh, yeah, that's a sensible thing. It's always that idea like you can make lots of money doing that. But what I found when I was studying it in particular was I could see myself doing something else. And it's almost just like I've realized as I've gotten older that when you are doing something but you can visualize and you're always thinking about doing something else, that's how you know that you're not meant to be doing that because you should be there and be present in that. It shouldn't always be like, oh, when's this going to end or when am I going to get to do that fun thing?
Yeah, that's actually a really good scope. So, if you are imagining yourself in a different space, that's where you should be walking towards,
isn't
it?
Yeah, right. And it's the big thing I've always said now is that, like, give yourself permission to do that because I think we're always waiting for someone else to say, that's okay, you can go do that then. Like an adult telling us that we can do something.
Our inner child.
Yeah, it's like give yourself permission to do that. You don't have to wait for someone else to say, yeah, that's okay, you don't have to do that. Do what you want to do. Like give yourself that permission and then it'll all unfold before you.
Do you think that's a bit of people-pleasing fun when we pursue something that's not really us?
Well, yeah, I think so. You do it whether it's for your parents or for that general sense of society. We're doing so much for other people's perception of us as opposed to, like, it's not ridiculous to, like, do something that makes you happy. It doesn't have to be something that makes you happy all the time. But, yeah, the idea that, no, that's okay, you can pursue that. Not everyone is suddenly going to jump out of every profession and we're going to have no one will be an engineer and no one will be a lawyer because we'll all be painters. That's not the case. Like there will be the resonance you feel doing that thing. There will be people who feel that doing that job too.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you there. I always think, you know, if we're sitting in something then we might be good at it. But if we don't love it, we're denying someone else their passion. So let it go and let them have their passion.
Amen.
Yeah. So in uni you did some arts as well.
Yes, I did a Bachelor of Creative Arts alongside the law degree. And it was really interesting because I was the only one in my legal year who was doing that as the double major, because basically most people do like law commerce or law history or law politics, like things that seem more lateral to each other. And I was the one who did law creative arts. And it was always like the exams would always clash, and like when we'd do shows for the creative arts units, those would clash because like they wouldn't schedule according to that one student who was doing both. So I always had to work around that.
Wow. And, okay, so when you left uni, what did you do then?
That's when it was that moment of just like, now what? Like, I went to the College of Law, which is where you go after you graduate to do your practical legal training to become admitted to the bar, as we say. It's like the bar exam in America, but here you get admitted by the Legal Practice Board. And I was there, and it was so interesting. I had like a lecture, and what we do, you do more practical stuff there. So in uni, it's more theoretical, and there you're doing like actual like mock trials and things like that. And I was having so much fun with that aspect of it in class. Like they'd be like, Now, in a like a client meeting, like what would you serve the client? And I'd be like, Coke Zero. And they're like, why, Alexander? I was just like, because it's the same great taste and none of the calories. And it's like, I feel like that's important. And this is like a legal content. And like getting that response, everyone like laughing because like whenever you would do things, you'd make it more dramatic and you'd be like with a witness or something and like, you know, hamming it up like as if we were in LA law. But yeah. I started then to be like, oh, like that's like I've got to stop pushing towards something that I don't want to do. And like clearly maybe I can do this other thing.
Yeah.
Maybe I can do that. Like I can make people laugh, I've realized. Like I knew I could, but then you're just like, oh, but I've come so far, 5.5 years of uni. Now the practical legal training, you're like, oh, I haven't even worked in the profession yet. Maybe I'll like it more then. But it's almost like how much more time before you're like, no, you know pretty soon.
Yeah.
And yeah. So
what did you do, okay, arts-wise then? Where did you go to first?
It was improvisation, actually. Mm-hmm. I always loved the idea of improvisation because my big thing, my favorite character when I was little was the genie from Aladdin and how wherever he was, he made it like it was in a show or it was fun.
Yeah.
And it was that improvisational element and I loved that idea.
Was that when Robin Williams played the genie? Yes. Oh my gosh,
100%.
Yes. So amazing.
Just so funny and just full of energy and manic and all that. And I loved that. And then it felt like when I did improv for the first time that I could do that. And I was just like, yeah. And then you're just, wherever you are, you're just doing these scenes and making stuff up on the spot and you don't have to learn a script and it's with other people and it's all very present and fun. And I did my first class with the Hoo-Ha.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
at the Brisbane Hotel.
Yeah, I love the Hoo-Ha. All their shows are amazing. Mm. Yeah.
Very talented people. And, yeah, getting to do that and being like, wow, we did a little graduation show and all those things and getting to do all that. And then you're like, oh, this is fun. How do I turn this into something? Like, that's when I was just like, okay, let's lean into this in some way.
Yeah. Improv, I like it. I think it's a good life skill. Mm. And I think even if you're doing stand-up comedy, it's a really good 100% skill to apply, especially in a crowd work situation.
Yeah.
But I also love the make-believe of it. It's that inner child. Yeah.
Inner child, 100%. You're literally as adults playing, which we stop doing.
Yeah.
And then you like to come back to that idea of play and pretend.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the best thing ever.
It so is. And you also teach kids, don't you, in improv?
I did, yeah, for a long time, for about 5 years. Mm. I was teaching youth classes in particular in Mandurah. And, yeah, to see the resilience you can build from that with young people and the fact that they all stayed for like the entire duration. Like they were started when they were like 16 and they're leaving now they're in their 20s. You're like, oh, like this is important. This is something that's so valuable. We've got young people that obviously are at high anxiety in the current state. Mental health is a huge thing with young people and a huge concern. And seeing this arts-based things for the kids that aren't particularly sporty, like myself, to see them have an opportunity to do something where it really resonated with them and they loved it and they grow from there and they build that confidence, which then they take down their own paths. You're like, this is good. This is something good. And yeah, I agree with you. It's a life skill. As a performance art, it's great as well. I don't see a career as an improviser. It's not like, oh, what do you do for work? It's like, oh, I'm a full-time improviser. It's just like,
yeah.
But I do see it as definitely something for the tool belt.
Yeah.
If you can improvise, you can use that in any profession.
Absolutely.
You can be the person, they're like, oh, the MC didn't turn up. Do you mind hopping up? Someone will be like, oh, no. But an improviser, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah.
Hop up. Oh, we don't have the script. That's fine. I'll just improvise the lines. Or like, oh, we need you to just kind of talk to the crowd. Or we've got this big client coming in. Do you mind meeting with them? You're just like, oh, yes and is the rule of improv. Yeah.
Yes and. I like
yes,
that.
Yes and. You don't say no but because that blocks the scene. We say yes and. So you build because it's about two people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great way of looking at it as well. Yeah. And I like that you said it's a confidence builder. Mm. That's one of the things that, gosh, I acknowledge in myself lacking confidence. And it's funny, other people's perceptions on us as individuals.
Yes.
For me, it's I really do lack confidence, but I'm madly, insanely passionate. And people mistake passion for confidence.
Right, yeah, because if you had said to me, oh, I don't have any confidence, I'd be like, what are you talking about? You literally built a company up with your friend in a field that you weren't working in. You sort of entered into it and worked your way through it. That's not exactly someone who's like, oh, yeah, they lack a lot of confidence. Like, No, that's someone who's trailblazing.
No, Alexander, I'm very passionate and very determined.
Funny, those two things sound like another word. Confident, perhaps, would be the way that I'd describe that.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know.
You're allowed to take
it's
up
it's
space.
The inner one, you know.
Oh, yeah, but that's all of us, right? It's called being alive. We're all projecting this image of ourselves, but I think the work speaks for itself.
It sure, yeah, it does, doesn't it? Okay, so from improv, where did you go there?
I was doing that consistently. So you're pretty much doing it every week, a few times a week, and developing it as a skill because it's like a muscle. The more you do it, the better you get at it. And then I did improv at a Perth comedy room. We were asked by the room runner to do this improv thing. I used to do this thing called the improvised movie where you do a movie in like 5 minutes. And it's really fun because you play lots of characters. You do the camera angles. You're almost like, we cut to this, fade to black. This song comes up. And really fun. And the audience really like it because improv's so present. And then after that performance, he sent me a message being like, oh, would you like to perform again next week? And I was like, oh, yeah, sure. And like some more improv? And he was like, no, we're doing 50 first jokes. Would you like to do some stand-up? And that's where you're just like that moment where someone has put out the offer, if you will, in improv, and you say like, yes, and. So, yeah, and then I came the next week and did my first stand-up set.
Wow.
Telling the Lord of the Rings joke because I'm classy like that because I read.
How did the first time go as a stand-up?
It went really well.
Yeah.
Really well. And I'm glad it did because I know I've heard from other people when they have that first negative experience then they can like take years to come back to it. You know, you have like a super negative, you're like never doing that again, cross that off the list. But it went really well and you got a good response and I think I already felt quite confident being on stage, so it wasn't any of the stage fright aspect of it. It was more just that it's just you. And I think with stand-up, what's so interesting is that there's nothing protecting you in a sense. Like when you're in a show and you're playing a character, then you can say I was a character and there's like production around that. When you're in an improv team, there's other people. So you're building together. It's not, but when you're stand-up, it is you.
Yeah.
So if they're not laughing, they're not laughing because you're not funny in that time for them.
Yeah.
So it's very personal and it's hard to not take something like stand-up personally because they can't be like, I didn't find, they're not going to be like, I didn't find that character you played funny. They're going to be like, I didn't find you funny. And that's so much more personal. So it's
I've
a really
wondered
brave
that,
thing
Alexander,
to do.
With, sorry, even you talking about different characters, you're taking on their persona.
Yeah.
But you're right, with stand-up, it's still you. Yeah, it's you.
I've always been someone who, I'm not a big fan of the people, well, for myself, I don't like walking around with the mic. I've always liked to have it stationary, just to have that physical barrier still between me and the audience. And it's always like a something you can hold on to as well.
Yeah.
You know, if we were like on the Titanic, I'm just like, no!
It's funny you say that. I've seen it, and because I photograph as well,
yeah,
I've seen so many photos where certain comics actually have
holding their hand onto it, yeah.
And they like move it around. Yeah, it's really, it's like this clutch, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, there's something very, that's why stand-up doesn't really work with like a headset mic. It's very different like that. The mic, there's something about it. That even the fact that we still use mics with the cord. I mean, we could use wireless mics, but you create that sense of, it's something, it's tactile. It's, I find it very grounding to hold onto the mic. And I like it as a barrier still. And then I can use my hands, which I like as well.
Yes, that's true. And if you're animated, that's actually
helps
does help
a lot.
With that.
Mm.
Yeah. If someone was starting out in any of these realms, in stand-up or in improv, what would you recommend?
I would recommend that they do it and keep doing it. I think don't judge it based off your first time alone. And if you're knocking on a door and no one's answering that door, then go knock on another one. I think if you try to wait for the gatekeepers, in a sense, to let you in, you'll be waiting a long time. So, go knock on another door. I think sometimes we kind of have this vision of pathways to get to things, and it's just like you look at any of the stand-up comedians or people working in comedy, and it's never the same path, ever.
Mm.
It's never like they did this, 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 and they went through, and then the next person did this, 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 and they went through. It's always different pathways, always.
Yeah, I think even what you're saying there is being a self-advocate and being proactive. It's
100%. Do not wait for other people to let you. Like, people, we're not mind readers, so most of the time if you don't go up to someone and say, I would like to perform stand-up at your venue, they're not going to just assume you do because you go and hang around hoping one day they'll be like, wait a minute, this person didn't show up. Wait, you're there in the corner. It's your time. Like, Yeah. That's the stuff of movies. Like in real life, yeah, tell people like, hey, I'd really like to do it. Be proactive and what's in the locus of your control.
Mm.
Because stuff you can, yes, you can write jokes. Yes, you can record yourself. Yes, you can work on so many things, other skills around. You can take voice lessons. You could sing. The ability to control the tone of your voice is so useful in comedy. But no one's saying to a comedian like, oh, I want to do comedy. Have you thought about singing lessons? Like,
yep.
All of those skills come into it because when you do comedy, you bring you and that's the point of difference, right?
Yeah.
I used to think sometimes when I watched comedy that I could take a set and give it to anyone else on that lineup and no one would be like, oh, it doesn't sound right. It sounds like they're doing someone else's set because it homogenizes in a way when there's not the diversity.
Mm.
So allow yourself to be like, yeah, that what you find funny is what you've got.
That would actually be really interesting, getting someone to write a set and getting each different comic to deliver it because their delivery would be so different.
Yeah. And seeing, yeah. Yeah, your point of difference. Lean into it. Don't try to like, especially when you just start out, you watch like famous comedians and you start to try to emulate things they do. And yeah, don't feel like you have to do that. Your people will, if you're authentic, like as much as we all lean into this now in this Instagram world, if you're authentic, that'll resonate with the audience because you'll be more comfortable.
Yeah.
And they don't need to see you pretending to be someone else because then it'll feel weird.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Mm.
Recently I did stand up.
I saw.
And are you seen?
Saw the photos.
For me, it made me realize just how not grounded I am at the moment and how I'm usually very present. And that's a really weird scope to get onto a stage and have that come crashing onto you.
Yeah.
And then
crystallizing moment, right?
Yeah. And you feel it. And I don't know why getting on stage made me realize that. And it made me realize I've got to find a space to become more grounded and at peace with everything because I just felt like I was projecting this fear and my heart was in my throat. I couldn't breathe. And I thought, you know, felt like I was boxing and I thought, if I don't breathe right now, I'm going to pass out.
Mm. Which would have been somewhat of a joke. That it's like she just got up on stage and passed out. It was pretty funny.
This is an emergency now. I know. It would have been quite weird. What's she doing?
What a moment though. If I'm like, were you there that night? And
I was there. Do you remember when she did this? Yeah. So I guess, it's something I think you'll learn a lot about yourself through doing these journeys and putting yourself out there and getting on stage. It's eye-opening and that 100%. Self-development is huge in this scope.
And you do the work afterwards as well because you can become quite introspective about it. If I've noticed when a lot, in my experience at least, when you start out in comedy, it's very fun and easy, if that makes sense. Like you go from one thing to another. So like I did my first gig and then I did my second one and they're all just going well. And then I entered the Curtin Tav competition as a lot of people in Perth do and I won it. And what you did when you won it back then is you won a spot at the Comedy Lounge, which was like a big deal to perform at the Comedy Lounge. It is still awesome. Now. I don't know why I said that like that. But it was huge. And I remember winning. I was just like, oh, my God, like it's all going to happen now. And then I was in Raw. And then I got my state finalist in Raw. And I'm just like, I'm going to win Raw. And then I'll get picked up by some Melbourne thing. And it's all like you plan this trajectory. And then like when that doesn't happen, when you don't win the state final, and then you're like, well, now what?
Yeah. How did you cope with that then?
It was strange because it was almost like, you this momentum of a train or something building up, you're just like, wow, clearly I found my thing. Maybe I should just be a stand-up comedian. This is my thing. And it's all working and everyone's saying how funny you are and you're believing it and the audiences are responding. And then, yeah, when it halts for that moment, you're like, wait a minute. And then you're stuck being like, am I even that funny? Or you start to worry and you get into your head and then the perception of you changes because you go from being a new upstart person to like, who does this guy think he is?
Yeah.
And that's not even necessarily people saying to you, like, who do you think you are?
No, it's that's just, your self-talk,
that's
isn't
yourself.
It?
Yeah. You're almost telling you like, oh my God, like, oh, everyone else doesn't think I'm good enough so that I don't deserve to perform in the Comedy Lounge or I don't, and you're just putting all these things and it turns into this huge introspection thing where you're just like, what's funny? And then you're getting off on stage like, crying, and then people are like, oh, you did the same jokes you did last time. You're like, oh, I thought, like, oh. And the lack of mentorship, which I think is so important in every other profession and in comedy. I think, in my experience, like, I didn't really have the mentorship coming up, and I would have loved it.
Yeah.
I think I would have definitely, and now when it comes to stand up, it's more something that I do, not proactively, though. I'm not going out of my way to perform as much as I used to in a stand-up context. But I think if I don't know, maybe if I had a mentor who was just like, no, Alexander, keep going. Like, I don't know. You gotta.
What year did you first, or how long ago did you start?
3 years ago.
Yeah.
3 years ago. And in that first year, I was performing lots, you know, doing Shapiro's and doing the Fremantle Comedy Factory, which is still both. Well, Shapiro's has sort of moved, but those venues are still very much still running now. And I remember getting, you start to feel part of it, right?
Yeah.
Everyone starts to know your name and like you see your name on the whiteboard and people start to consider you good. So they'll put you like towards the end of the night and you're just like, oh my gosh, oh, the room runner put me like last, even though that doesn't mean you're the headliner, but you're like, ah, that's good, right? Right. And then you start to have more fun with the audience and you get more comfortable and then you get booked for the gigs down south and stuff like that. And you start to be like, oh, wow, I'm among it. Like they bring the Melbourne comics over and you get to go down with them and you're just like, oh, this is good, right? And then you're doing workshops and then you're getting paid to do it, which is, I still found like sometimes when I was just like, oh, my God, we're paid so much for like so little time.
Yeah.
But obviously you're not just paid for the 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It's the year of work and, yeah.
It's all that, yeah, the writing and the. Yeah, everything else that goes into it.
Turns into a thing. And then, it shifts. And then you're sort of like, oh, I'm out every night. I'm hanging around these rooms.
What made it shift for you?
That's a good question. I think I was running a company, which meant that I was doing a lot of work similar to how you were doing the thing. But I was performing as well. From the beginning too. So it wasn't that I ran the company. And then kind of in your case, it's wonderful because you've had the chance to kind of establish it all and now move into that individual space, which is great. I was kind of in that individual space parallel to running a company. And I think there's always a clash of when you are in charge and you perform for the thing you're in charge of, it's very hard to not enter that gray space of like, oh, well, I guess he put himself in the show or like, yeah, you're in charge of people who you've taught.
Yeah.
And it kind of, at the end, it was really hard because it had just completely blurred everything. It wasn't clear. Like I had to make decisions that would affect people. So we'd get booked for performances as a company and then they'd be like, oh, well, who's performing? And I was the person in charge. So I would be like, okay, well, the client said they'd like these people. And they'd be like, oh, sure, the client said they wanted these people. And it's kind of like, oh, I guess you have to be friends with him to get the gigs.
Oh, that's really hard.
It was. And I think I was very generous when I started out with my time and like giving and my own money into the company. And you just give all these things and you're just like, no, I'm a nice person. Like, but I'm making these decisions which are making some people so upset. And then it turns into the politics of any workplace. Once you've gone beyond 2-3 people, you're starting to deal with 10, 15, 20 people. At one stage, I was teaching 3 classes, level 1 to 3, as well as a youth class, as well as performing every Thursday because we had a weekly performance at the Comedy Lounge. And it was just becoming too much. And at a certain point, I felt like I actually need to remove myself from this because I started to think like, I'm not even getting to perform as much anymore because I'm dealing with running a company and worrying about insurance and worrying about public liability, and we have to have a code of conduct and we have to have a dispute resolution process. And I was just like, this is the reason I left law. I didn't want to come. How did I find myself back in like discussing with an accountant with regards to like, okay, well, this is the income. I was like, what? And I was just like, this is not who I want to be. I don't want to be the guy who's telling people, no, sorry, the room booker thinks you're not funny. Like, and since I wouldn't tell them that, I would tell them, they're like, oh, we went with someone else. And they'd be like, oh, but you taught me improv or you taught me and now suddenly I'm not good enough. It's just like, ah, you're in two minds. You're the teacher who's creating a safe environment and supporting people, but then you're also the performance manager who's then saying, actually, you're not strong enough to perform on stage. But you said I was great in class. It's just like,
yeah, it's like a conflict, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, conflict of roles massively. Yeah.
Yeah, it was an awful time. It was awful because I think like most things we all start with, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. and for the branches to reach up into heaven, the roots must reach down into hell. you know, to quote Carl Jung.
Love it.
It ended up being an awful kind of, and as we like in the arts, we like ritualistic departures from things where it's always like, and now we'd like to say thank you to this person for 3 years and a round of applause and here's your plaque and box of Cadbury favourites probably. and to go to kind of leave that all in this kind of really abrupt way was hard because you have this thing that you cared a lot about and you dedicated so much time to. And you, I still have like all the wonderful cards and things that all the students had written to me and like gifts people had brought me. It was like so much love. And then it kind of ends with this kind of like, oh, this like yucky feeling. And so like, oh, it all ends like that. Me stepping away completely, just saying like, I can't do this anymore. Mm. I'm clearly not the right person to be running this, selling the company and stepping back completely and then having to once again be like, okay, well now who am I?
Wow,
I was known so much as that guy who did improv.
Yeah.
The improv guy. He teaches improv. He performs improv. And then who am I now?
Wow.
Yeah.
So did you recreate yourself once you closed that chapter?
Yeah. I decided to lean into the idea that actually, Alexander, you're funny and you can do this yourself and rebuild from there. And I remember saying to myself, and I was like, because I even left the teaching side behind, and I was just like, I'm going to do one more term of classes just to prove that those people will come and learn because I'm a good teacher, not because it was underneath the banner of a company or something like that. And I did that. And then after that, I was just like, okay, yeah, the skill set's here. It's me. And it's not to be egomaniacal to be like, I'm brilliant at everything, because I'm not. I've made a lot of mistakes in
my we all have, don't
creative arts career. But leaning into that idea, it's just like I'm allowed to take up space too.
Mm.
Like I don't have to be the person in the background feeling like they're responsible for everyone's happiness and careers. And people are like, oh, can you get me that job? It's just like, wait a minute, I'm not an agent. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I like what you just said there about you being responsible for others.
No.
We've all got to be responsible for ourselves and we've all got to do our own self-reflection and self-work. It's so important.
Yeah. And you kind of think you're just like, yeah, we're responsible to things, but we're not responsible for things.
Yep. And none of us are responsible for anyone else's happiness.
Yeah. Which is a dangerous thing because once you start feeling like you are, and that's somewhat of a nice feeling because people are so nice to you. They're like, oh, thank you so much for the opportunities. And you're like, oh, you're welcome. Like, da, da, da. And then how quickly can all, like, the second things aren't going as well. Maybe we're not getting bookings or maybe things have started to dry up and then it's like, what's his fault? He's in charge. And it's just like, oh, how quickly you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I think people also forget on individuals, you know, stance here. We have things going on outside these worlds in our personal well-being and our personal lives that need our attention and focus. And so sometimes you do take a bit step out and you can't always be there wholly for others. You know, sometimes we have to be there for self.
Yeah. So there's that beautiful quote, which is just like, you shouldn't set yourself on fire to keep other people warm.
Yeah. And oh, I'm my like, gosh, that's like, a good one.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's so true. And it's not to say that I was martyring myself in any regard, but it did feel like at the end it was like, oh, this is, no. So to then rediscover yourself and then really start leaning into that. And that's where the advice I think would be that we've got to remember that this is comedy, but this isn't just comedy, this is business. And I think leaning into the business side is what can take. Because there's a lot of very funny people. Funny is not like, oh my God, we find one funny person every 100,000. No, there's lots of funny people and it's a wonderful thing because imagine the world with no funny people. But if you've got a business mindset or if you can hire someone who does, then that's when you can really start to elevate beyond there.
Yeah.
Because talent is wonderful, but
yeah, let someone else become your agent and
you need to there needs to be business decisions behind what you're doing because if you're spending every night hanging around to do a 5-minute set unpaid, it's a lot of your time which could be spent just going to the gym, for example, as crazy as that sounds. I know I lent heavily into exercising after that because I was like, what's in the locus of my control? How can I get more work? And I started to think laterally.
Yeah.
So it no longer became just about I need to be a stand-up comedian. It was like that can be one part of me and it doesn't always have to be the forward-facing part either. So it doesn't have to be like I have to be seen doing stand-up every week so people know I'm a stand-up comedian. No, that's fine. If they don't think I'm a stand-up comedian, that's fine. I'm not doing it for anyone else. And, yeah, so stand-up was definitely one of those things that kind of is no longer one of my forward-facing parts, but I'm still more than happy to do it. I do love it still. I think it's, once again, the best part is, yeah, when you're out there with the audience, that's stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Like most of us, we're not really interested in the let's hang around in the back room after we've done our set and just complain about how comedy's hard or like, yeah, we know it's hard.
How did you find that in the back room? Like we were talking briefly about, you know, we're talking about this show actually, but we're talking about how, you know, there's a different scope of people who are you guys are real when you come on here and, you know, really share your vulnerabilities and who you are, which is lovely. Hard. Thank you.
Like, no, you're welcome. I think it's so important to speak about this stuff because I think we can get caught up without thinking that everyone's walking around with this beautiful veneer of like, oh, and then they won that. And look at them. They're doing so many gigs. And look at these photos. Oh, they're in Melbourne. Like, you can quickly fall behind to be like, no. Like, you don't know the truth of what's really happening behind a lot of people's lives. And to assume we all put our most positive thing forward and, like, behind it. Yeah, it's hard. I never really felt like I was part of the – and it's not to say it's other people's fault. It very much is my own that I didn't beseech that I, like, didn't, yeah, become – not that you have to become friends with everyone in comedy, but like you feel like it's this club, right? And you want to be part of the club where it's just like when people say the names of who they're going to book, you want your name to be one of those ones.
Yeah.
And kind of you want your name to be like, oh, they're funny. Yeah, book them, that kind of thing. And you weirdly posture in the back rooms. And I always remember feeling what I liked most of all was when new people would come in and do their first sets. And I was just like, no, keep going. Like, knowing that that's such an important thing for someone who gets off stage for the first time, that they need to be told, hey, that was great, I liked this. Or if they ask for more direct feedback, then to give it to them, not to humor people and be like, you've got it. Like, no, like, yeah, to be that supportive person if you can. And to, yeah, to create, I don't know, comedy, stand-up in particular, it is, I mean, at the end of the day, it's individuals. People aren't drawn to stand-up because they're, I'm all about helping other people. It's more like, oh, well, I, it's very I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really, yeah, I like the way that, yeah, again, giving that feedback and encouraging new people because new people, when they come, they're so enthusiastic.
Yeah, they bring such a positive vibe and you kind of go into these back rooms and like mental health in comedy is not great. It seems to draw a lot of people who have a lot of, I don't know if the term is emotional baggage maybe. Yeah. You bring all that and you kind of project that onto stage and some of the funniest people, when they're at their funniest, are like at their most depressed off stage. You're like, oh, how interesting the kind of opposite.
Yeah,
is
it's
true.
Like a therapy session, but like, and being able to get to that space true. Where you find that happy point.
Yeah.
It's incredible how people can shift through comedy.
So and the style like they do. Yeah. Yeah, no. But you know what else is like therapy? Actual therapy. So I would recommend that to like everyone.
Yeah.
Try not to use the audience as your therapy.
Maybe use their laughter. You know, get their laughter.
Yeah, use it like a drug, right? So that way when it gets at high, everything's great. And then when you like get withdrawals, you fall apart. And that's comedy. It's this beautiful back and forth.
Okay, so you went from stand-up. Where did you go then?
So then I started to move into acting. And it's like all things. I'm someone who has... Oh, well, I think that's fair to say that I'm like self-diagnosed in a way, but I've got kind of a body dysmorphia.
Really?
Yeah. So my perception of myself has always been like that I'm not like that good looking or that like physically fit or all these things. You kind of don't perceive yourself that way. And so I would never think of myself as being able to like be in TV ads or be in movies or present on TV or anything like that. I'd never like... When people say it to you, in like people are like, what are you talking about? Like, you're so handsome. Like, you start to be like, you kind of.
I know. I'm sitting here looking at you very curiously because to give people scope here, Alexander is your buff.
Thank you.
And you are a very good looking man.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
But I guess it's what you believe in yourself, isn't it?
And 100%. And that's why it's so interesting, once again, when we think of the perception versus the reality. Like, I'm very conscious of myself. Like, I'm the person who never took their shirt off at the pool at school, changed in the toilets. That's me. That's Alexander.
Yeah.
And that goes through, like, your entire primary school, that into high school as an adult. Like, you hold on to that. I think Jonah Hill was talking about this recently as well, how only until he was 32 did he, like, take his shirt off on the beach.
Yeah.
Like, you go through your life with, like, not seeing yourself that way and then also perceiving the idea of being confident in yourself in that physical sense as a negative thing, right? So it's arrogant to say, I'm attractive, which in a way it kind of is. See, even still now. But yeah, I had that perception of myself, so I didn't allow myself to pursue any kind of acting in that regard because I didn't think I could. And then you start to do it and then you book work And you're just like, oh, it's almost like how awful that only once you get this external validation where they're like, we will pay you to be in this ad, that then you start to be like, maybe I can do this. And it's like, why couldn't I just believe in myself? Why did I have to wait for someone else? Once again, waiting for the gatekeepers, waiting for the permission from someone else to do something, to say you're good enough. And even then, just like in comedy that's full of rejection, acting is full of rejection, and it's once again very personal. Like, yes, I've been very fortunate because I've managed to book a lot of work, but also that comes with all the rejections, the emails, the in-person rejections.
How do you cope with that then?
It's hard. And it's once again, you're like, you don't want to take it personally and don't think about an audition after you've done it. But it's hard to not take it personally when you get told things like, you don't sound very Australian. Like, you know, what really? Does that even mean? Like, in or no, we don't really see you as this, or no, that's not very believable. And you can quickly be like, oh, that's, you know, you play them. Oh, that's fine, whatever. I'm like, no, no, no. But these little things, they hurt. This is like, oh, you're putting yourself out there to do these things. And yeah, it's the feedback. And that's why it's so important to get constructive feedback that you can actually work on.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone saying, oh, you don't sound Australian. You can be like, oh, do you take any kind of accent lessons? Because we think it would sound better with an American accent or something like that. That feels more constructive and proactive to kind of be like, no, not you.
Yeah. And you're right, because we can build on our skill set.
Yeah. So
I do locus like of constructive. Control. Yeah.
And that's, and if I've asked for feedback, that's useful. Obviously in the arts, like, you're not technically saying, could I please have some feedback straight after? You're kind of just being told no, or you're getting no email or something. It's very like impersonal. It's very brutal. It's very public sometimes when you don't get things, but it's like group auditions, and then it's like you hand out pieces of paper to the people who get the call back, and everyone else just doesn't get a piece of paper. Yeah. So.
Wow. All right. So you went into acting, you've done adverts, but you're doing some other stuff as well, yeah, on TV.
Yeah. It was so wonderful. I started just from a casting website, there was an option. They needed an entertainment reporter on a show called The Couch, which is a local show, which is a great local show. And Fred is someone who's given a lot of people an opportunity to practice being like, as if it's a professional TV show, and it's on Foxtel, it's on Aurora. And he needed an entertainment reporter, and I'm someone who's always been about pop culture. I'm very quick. I can like remember all these names and all these things and make jokes about them. And I saw it as an opportunity to kind of take that comedic edge, put that into there. And yeah, practice being on camera, getting more comfortable on camera, because it's once again just like stand up. If you're comfortable on stage, the audience will resonate. Same on TV. If you're uncomfortable, it's very like the people feel uncomfortable to watch it. So like, he seems really uncomfortable and awkward.
The audience can see it.
Yeah, yeah, see it, feel it. And so I did that, and getting to do that for I'm still doing it. I'm doing it this Sunday. I did it for about a year and a half, and then there was a Christmas party for the Couch, and at the Christmas party, the husband of one of the guests who'd been on The Couch consistently, he was a producer for a television show on Channel 7, and we were just seated at the same table. And I'm one of those people that sometimes like, oh, I won't go to the Christmas party, I don't know enough people, like I don't feel comfortable, you know, the classic neuroses that we all carry.
We have to talk ourselves into it.
So you go and you sit at the table, you don't know everyone, and he actually just mentioned me, because I thought, oh, Alexander, you've got a very nice speaking voice. And I was like, why, thank you. And he's like, do you do any presenting? I was like, oh, well, I just present on this show, The Couch, to the entertainment bit. He's just like, have you thought about doing other stuff? And that's where it's that nice opportunity comes a knock in. And I was just like, absolutely. Like, what are you talking about? He said, oh, well, I produced the show Home in WA. It's one of the longest running WA shows on Channel 7. It's on the weekends, on Saturdays. We need a new presenter. Would you audition for that? So I had to record an audition where, like, they send you the script and you learn the lines, because we don't use autocue. And it was for Fountains, I think, was the script. And I just recorded in my backyard and, like, tried to do it in the, you know, you try to put on the presentery voice of, like, someone from Better Homes and Gardens, where you're just like, and that'll correct after the break. right here on 7. Had a really fun, like, sent that to him, and I, like, tried to make it funny at the end, because I was talking about Fountains, and I was just like, I love Fountains. I fall asleep in Fountains. I nearly drowned in my fountain. And, like, which is quite a dark joke when I think about it. And he wrote back just like, oh, loved the presenting, maybe not the jokes at the end. Like, obviously, I was just like, well, fair enough. There's, my comedy always skewed somewhat dark, because I'm a cheery person, and I remember getting told when I studied improv in LA by one of the teachers there, Miles Stroth, who's quite a famous improviser. He said to me, he goes, Alexander, you're very happy. I was like, well, thank you. And he said, you can lean dark because you're so bright that it'll contrast really nice. And I was just like, oh, yeah, that's true. And that's why I think I'm so good at roast battles.
Well, tell us more about this LA journey as LA. Well. Like, that sounds interesting.
I did improv intensively for 3 weeks in Los Angeles. Every day it was a class of 4 of us. So there's no audience, so no one's laughing at anything you do. And it's just drills and scenes. And again, and he was a direct feedback person.
Yeah.
And he would tell you, he's like, that's not funny, do it again. Like, no.
Wow.
Yeah, real direct. And it was almost like when I came back from that, it was like taking moon boots off. Because then I was just like, wow, I'm like LA 5, but like Perth 8. Out of 10, obviously. Out of 100. And yeah, coming back here, and he was one of the people who was like, you can teach, Alexander. And I was like, no, I can't. It's almost like, once again, waiting for the permission from someone else. He's like, no, go back and teach. Why shouldn't you teach? Because you always think like, oh, but these people will be upset if I start teaching improv because I don't know it as well as they do. But once again, I've learned experience does not equal expertise.
Yeah.
Sometimes we think just because someone's been doing it for 10 years and then they can tell everyone else how to do it.
Mm.
Not necessarily the case. There's people who can enter into fields and within a year really have that knowledge, and if they work at it, yeah, can bring that expertise and charge for it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Wow. So, okay, so LA, that's exciting. And then you just said something else after that.
Oh, yeah, and then so I got the job on Channel 7, which was great.
Yes. But
then it's something, you know, that has that social proof, which is once again leading into a business context. You need the validation of things people have heard of to kind of prove that you can then do something else.
Yeah.
Because if you kind of enter into it with like, I was in a Fringe show. It's not to say Fringe isn't great, but Fringe is an open festival that 500 acts are in. So it's not exactly like, oh, well, then the quality's there. But if you say, I've been endorsed by this, it's like, oh, he's good enough. Well, they think he's good enough and they pay him to do it. He must be good enough at this. Like, you kind of, it laterally starts to develop you. And that's why I think the best advice is still approach things with a bit of a business mindset to be like, okay, now what can I do? Because from that, then I was able to get involved with Telethon, which is great.
Telethon's amazing.
Yeah, it's a wonderful part of Channel 7, and well, separate Channel 7, but works in collaboration with Channel 7. And then because then I'm just like, oh, well, I'm on Channel 7. Can I? And I reach out to those people. And then it's just like, oh, yeah. And then you're kind of making those connections and you build from there. And then from that, and then it's like, oh, cool. And then MC opportunities. And then, yeah, I hosted the Perth Japan Festival. I hosted the Pop Culture Festival. Like, you start to get more. And I was having a meeting with the deputy mayor. Like, it was like, whoa, this is all starting to happen in a sense. And I always try not to think of it like, my goal when I started this was to become a TV presenter on Channel 7, but it wasn't. But I try to think of it like a, you know, when you get like a, when you make something like a block of marble, right? Like a statue. You can kind of see the statue that you want to make. And what you're doing when you're taking any of these proactive steps is chipping away at it and allowing it to reveal itself to you. So try not to think of your career in the sense, for me this works, in the sense of like, I'm going to do this, this, this will lead to this, 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 and this is the end goal. We're working towards this end goal. Let's retroactively go back from that. I approach it more from the angle of let's take these steps and chip away until we reveal something.
Wow. Alexander, I guess I've got a question with that. You know, you say you've got your statue.
Yeah.
I think it's similar to what I say to people. You know, you have to separate self sometimes and become a brand.
Mm.
And that statue is that brand.
Yes.
And then because it, as much as you've got to put yourself out there on the stage so the audience connects with you, you also don't want to take on board, you know, everything. It's too hard.
So. It is. It's very, it is hard. And that's why stand-up's such an interesting art form.
Mm.
Because you are putting yourself out there in a very vulnerable way to strangers.
Yeah. Who may or may not like you.
Yeah. And who will judge you very quickly.
Absolutely.
It's the only industry I feel where you get direct feedback straight away.
Yeah.
The laughter is instantaneous from when you've given the joke.
Yeah.
Or not instantaneous.
Yeah, like, they don't come up to you. Like, they don't come up to you after three hours.
Like, I've reflected on your performance and we found this was good and this can be improved. And it's like, no, it's just like non-reactional reaction.
Yeah. Okay. So, acting and also presenting and being on TV.
Yes.
Is that where you want to go from here on?
I know once again by the fact that I don't see myself doing other things.
I love that.
So it's knowing that, and I can feel it now because I've acknowledged what that feeling is. And then, like, getting to be in, like, I got to be in Beauty and the Beast at the Regal, and that was fantastic.
Yeah, how beautiful.
Getting to play Gaston. I mean, who doesn't want to do that? Like, stuff like that.
That's awesome.
And that's, once again, I always see it as, like, that takes the comedic element because, and it's, like, merging the things. Once again, it's, like, you need to look a certain way to play someone like Gaston. You need to have, like, a comedic element to play someone like that. And you need to be able to sing, once again. It's, like, yeah, comedy doesn't, for me, have to be the purest form, if you will, the synthesized form of like stand-up is comedy. If you don't do stand-up, then you're not a comedian.
Yeah.
And I look to people who are role models for me in the sense of performers. I've always loved stand-up comedians like Natasha Leggero and Tig Notaro and Dimitri Martin. And then I've also loved, like, can see when you look at comedians in Australia that they move, like Melanie Bracewell, someone I really like at the moment. I always find it really funny on how have you been paying attention. And they move from stand-up into presenting on shows and they're funny on a show and I feel like that's something I can do really well.
Yeah.
I can lean right into that and be funny. But the pure form of like doing stand-up, I feel like if I focused on just that, I was just like that may not necessarily lead me into a place where I feel like I'd end up on a cruise ship. I don't know why that's the end goal, but I'd end up on a cruise ship like Giggles O'Shea or something. Yeah. So, like, Lynn, you're right when you said that to think of yourself, as cloying as it sounds, to think of yourself, what is your brand? Okay. And this is what I can bring. These are my skill sets. And being, yeah, your own advocate and direct with people what you want. Because they, once again, we're not mind readers. Like, say to people, like, okay, I would like to be on that show. Like, I got to be on Sunrise 2 weeks ago, and that was heaps of fun.
I loved and your clip on that. That was so much fun.
And there I'm doing a bend back on national TV.
I did a bend back very well.
Thank you. I actually winded myself doing it, but I try not to show that on camera. I'm just like,
What time did you have to get up in the 2:30. Morning?
2:30.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, nice and early.
You didn't warm up before it then?
I literally, because you had to write down all these things, but the producers take down everything that they like.
I mean, you're warming up as your body stretches. 2 a.m. you should be asleep.
True.
And then that's probably why you've caused yourself a bit of an injury.
Yeah. He was just like, so Alexander, would you be able to show us the bend back on TV? I was just like, I mean, what am I going to say? No, I don't want to do that. my party trick will be I'm going to, you know, cross my eyes. Yeah, so.
Oh, that's funny.
But it's leaning into it, right? Once again, like, and I got that opportunity through, there was this other actor who was in one of the operas I was part of, and he was just like, oh, they need someone to be on Sunrise. And straight away I was like, I'll do it. Like, I didn't even know what it was. But I was just like, yes. He's like, oh, okay, cool. What are your details? And once again, having that business stuff ready to go, having your website, having your reels, having photos that are good photos, not grainy photos. Like,
yeah,
you present that polished sense, then people will respond to that and respect it. But if you kind of come into it like, oh yeah, they'd love you, do you have some clips you can send them, you're like, oh, hold on, I've got to edit something, and then you send like a grainy audio track from a stand-up gig you did 2 years ago, it's like
I know. Yeah, I do hear you with that, definitely.
That's the skill set I'm telling people, guys, get onto the LinkedIn. That's where it's at.
Where did you learn to sing? Because you've mentioned singing.
I have a singing teacher. He's really? Very good, yeah. He's part of the WA Opera Chorus. And
oh, how amazing.
I met him through being an actor in one of the operas. And I'd said afterwards, like, oh, I sung at school. But then didn't after that. And I was like, oh, I really wish I'd get back into singing. He's like, oh, I'm a singing teacher, if you'd like to have some lessons. And I was like, yeah, I would. And then you once again, and then I said, yeah, I would. And then a year later, I then contacted him because I got into Beauty and the Beast, and I was just like, I told them I'm a singer. Wait, they're not listening to this, are they? and then like started doing, and I've had lessons every week since.
It's all right, it's past tense. You already nailed
yeah,
it.
Yeah, too late. Too late. The reviews are already in. Checks already cleared.
Wow. So that's quite a new thing then to experience for you, and a new growth thing.
Yeah. Once again, like I was just like, I loved being in the musical. That was so much fun.
That's really cool.
To give it that communal sense of so many people working together to the same goal. It takes that improv element of working together. If things go like wrong on stage, improvise. Getting to sing in front of an audience. Mark McGowan came and watched us.
No way.
Yeah.
It's like our state hero.
I know. It's like, this one's for you.
And I can imagine you doing that in character,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, can you imagine? Yeah. We must stop the show. There's a special man here tonight, and it's not me. Yeah, and then getting to do it and wanting to do more of that. And then they're like, okay, yeah, this is another avenue, and not limiting yourself to that idea of, because people often say to me, like, Alexander, you're doing too many things. You can't, you, how could you possibly focus on one thing if you're doing all these things? And I was just like, once again, it's like, not all of me has to be that forward facing bit. I don't always have to be that.
Yeah.
Because I could see how someone could say, like, well, you don't really do stand up. I was just like, not this week, but that doesn't mean that next week I won't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. I think it's good to diversify as well. 100%. Like, if you've got a lot of skill sets.
Why not? It keeps it so interesting. Like, my days are, every week is different for me, and I love that about it. Like, yeah, one week we're, yeah, in rehearsals for a musical. The next week we're recording about apartments in East Perth. Like, yeah.
That must be cool too. I love the property market.
Oh, it's fascinating. I've learned so much about it, because that wasn't what I saw myself like. And even people were like, oh, I look forward to the funny things you'll add. I was like, when we write the scripts, I can't just put like jokes in them.
Yeah, it's a scripted thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you're going to follow through with the TV presenting, keep going down that road, and perhaps singing now in live performances, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And you said it's a weekly singing lesson that you're doing, is it?
Yes, every week. One singing lesson a week, just like going to the gym. I think of it as like you work the muscles.
Yeah. One, I worked with a singer once, and she did a thing called throga. And it's
throat,
like a
yoga.
Yeah, it's awesome. It. She went to America to do it, and I love it. It's Cass, totally Cass. Yeah. So, yeah, she had awesome vocals and exercised them through this experience. But yeah, I also through the opera scene, Patricia Elise, she did voice coaching with me when I first started on stage. I used to go Bright Red and Shake, and she helped me 10 lessons to actually get me past that. And yeah, just keep growing, people. I think everyone needs to just self-development, just keep working and chipping things off, like you said.
And don't try to think of it as in everything has to go. Like, if it's not working towards this specific goal in this specific way, it's just like it'll find a way there. You will get there. It's not a sprint. And sometimes we think, like, I should be further along, because you look at people younger than you and you think, like, oh, my gosh, they're crushing it, and da, 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 they've got this opportunity and I didn't get that until I was this old and da-da-da. But that's not – yeah, come back to you, and you're exactly right. Work
Don't
on
compare it. Yourself to others.
The big lesson, the thing we all do and say not to do, right? Don't compare. And then we're just looking at each other's Instagrams and TikToks and being like, oh, so many views.
Tell me something. Give me a bit of scope on 50 First Jokes, because that's actually coming up tomorrow.
It is. I saw that again, and I almost was just like, should I go back?
I've actually put my name down for it. So, but give me some scope. How does that go?
Well, basically, you have to do new material. When I did it, and now I noticed, because I even looked at the sign-up sheet, you know, you have to tick a box saying, I will do new material. It's like a declaration almost. You have to do new material. And so I'd never done stand-up before, and I always have this joke in my mind about The Lord of the Rings and how it's my favorite movie. And I always love the idea of when you watch a movie, linking it back to your real life, basically.
Yeah.
So I did the joke, and I've done it, and it was the one I used in my Raw set, and I used it from then on because it was a solid joke, and it can be extended out to like last 5 minutes or 10 minutes. Basically, I get more and more specific. So I talk about like, oh, have you seen Lord of the Rings? And the audience are like, yeah, we've seen it. And I'm just like, but like the first one? And people are like, yeah, we've seen that one. I was like, it's directed by Peter Jackson and produced by Fran Walsh. Have you seen that one? And they're like, yes, we've seen that one. I was like, there's a scene in that one where like Gandalf is taking the 9 members of the Fellowship through the mines of Moria to the bridge of Khazad-dûm. Do you guys remember that bit? And it just gets more and more specific. And then it kind of ends. I was just like, and then Gandalf like falls down. And as he's falling, and then he falls into hell with this Balrog of Agmar, and that scene just gets me so upset because that's how my uncle died. Oh. And it's just that idea of just like that tag at the end where it's just like, what? Yeah. And that was my first joke that I did that night. And yeah, it went off. And then from then I just made it more, and I just keep leaning into it, and you can just keep going like, do you guys remember that bit? And you just keep doing that as you get more and more specific.
So you're really drawing the crowd in.
Yeah.
And you're just taking them in for that ride.
And then that last bit. And then it's like, what? Yeah, and you can do that with any film. I found that. And then I lean into the next bit, which was my bit about movies being in reverse, because I like a happy ending. So then, like, you watch Titanic in reverse, guys. Now it's a ship that brings people back to life out of the oil. Right. And you can do it with any film. Like, tell me a film. And I sometimes get audience members to say it, and I'll be like, yeah, that film, if you watch it in reverse, I've never seen it. Like, you can really have fun with it. And that was another bit that did really well. And then I did a bit called Ruminations, which I'd done in a Fringe show, which was where I had my shower thoughts that I had. Like a library can never truly be closed. You can always just read the close sign. Yeah. I once got locked in a Freedom store.
Yeah. I love these shower thoughts. It is our quiet spot to think and reflect.
Yeah. And then whenever I get one, I just write it down and add it because I've got a book. Yeah. A comedy book, you know, because you feel like a school student. You've got all the stickers of all the clubs.
I was going to ask you, you do have a book and you write down your ideas.
Yes, as they come. And now I do it on my phone.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've got a note on my phone where I just add to it whenever I think of something funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. And then you can expand on that idea.
Yeah. And then I remember doing a lesson with another comedian. He said about how you go from the macro to the micro. You don't start at the micro. So you don't start super specific because people can't relate to that. But you can start with like, hey, does everyone like movies? Super general, right? Mm. Everyone be like, yeah, we all like movies. Has anyone seen this movie? He's like, oh, yeah, yeah. And the more specific you get, it's like you're taking them down that journey. But if you start too super specific, it almost alienates the audience.
Yeah, that's a really, really good tip there.
Yeah, no, it was a solid one. I've used it. Yeah. I only did one lesson with him.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing.
You're welcome.
Is there anything that you recommend for, I guess, anyone that's wanting, I know that you said keep working and stuff, but say you wanted to enter the TV realm.
Yes.
What would you recommend with that?
I think that's always such a hard one because a lot of people have said to me like there's a direct question of, well, how do you get, like, it's not that they're advertising, hello, we're looking for a TV presenter. Mm. And it is, once again, that to have that professional image ready so that when the opportunity comes up where you meet someone who is in a position to kind of audition you or something like that, that you've got the business card, that you've got the...
Or have your content ready.
Have it ready and have it presented in a professional way. Treat it like you're already working.
Yeah. That's smart. So it's sort of like your resume, but maybe a digital resume.
A digital resume that is updated and put work on there that is like presented in a professional way, and then you can build from there and reach out to people. Feel comfortable to send someone a message and be like, hi, I'd love to have a cup of coffee and talk with you about this if you're free. Because once again, like, I'm someone myself who, if someone reached out to me, I would love to do that for someone because I know how hard it was for me to look on the outside once again, knocking on the door and no one's answering it.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So you're happy to mentor people 100%. If they ask.
If I've got the time, yes, I will make the time for it. But I'm not going to, like, become a mentor business.
I think it's important that people know who they 100%. Can approach and say, hey, you know, can I ask you something?
Please, please do. And I put all my stuff, I try to be as present as I can on my social media because I've always had a very difficult relationship with social media because I know it's a necessary evil in this industry because once again it factors into that body dysmorphia, sort of presenting yourself in a certain way and feeling like, this feels weird to put these photos or to be in these ads, or like it feels like it's super arrogant to be like, look at me doing this, look at me next to a billboard of me. Like,
we have become a real look at me society, haven't we? And I'm someone, I struggle to even look at myself in the mirror. If I'm putting my makeup on, it's all good. Yeah. But I don't check myself out and go, hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
I'm trying to get comfortable with being in front of the camera instead of behind the camera.
Yeah.
And that's hard. That's hard work.
Yeah. And it's almost like you feel bad to say it's hard work because people are like, well, there's hundreds of people that want to do it, so then leave. Like, not that anyone said that either. It's all, once again, in your narrative for you to be, like, ungrateful to say that, like, oh, I feel really self-conscious. It's like, no one forced you to do any of this.
Yeah.
It's an elected profession.
Is there any myth that you've come across as a performer or, that's a common myth that people think, audience think, which isn't true?
That's a good question. I think they think that it's fun, so you shouldn't be paid for it. That if you're having fun, or that the perception that you're having fun, which we are, that then, well, then you're getting to do something that's fun, so we shouldn't pay you like for it because then it's not a skill.
Yeah.
Or there's not, you're not thinking of the work around it. You're just thinking of it in the sense of like, well, they got to hop up on stage and sing a song. Why'd we pay them $1,000?
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, and I can appreciate why, but that more comes from that. Yeah, the creative arts in general have always had that perception.
I actually understand that quite well. I had a situation recently with a guy who posted something replied to one of our posts. And he was basically, he was taking away from, it was our singles events actually. Yeah. And I said to him, look, I don't come to your workplace.
Yeah.
And, you know, take away from you as a worker. Why are you doing this in an event sort of? I don't get the space that you're working in here, like, and this isn't okay. So, you know, if you're not interested, see you later, leave it alone.
You know? Good on you for calling it out, because I think especially social media, it allows us to create that sense of like the soapbox and standing up there and admonishing someone in this public forum and trying to shame them. It's just like, if you really want to speak to them, you can reach out to them and say like, hi, I'd love to speak to you. Can I speak to you over the phone or something like that so we can have some kind of tone of voice? Because social media, that's not how you communicate with someone. If you didn't have fun at the event, that's fine. Not everyone's going to enjoy something. But then reach out to me. And if you have some, like, may I give you some feedback? And you could say, yes, thank you. Or actually, no, thank you. I don't want it.
Yeah.
And that's fine too. But yeah, you're right. And I don't know whether it's a victim mentality or something, but we kind of, because you do get the clout, if you will, or if you speak up on social media, like, oh, good on you for speaking out on social media. It's just like, okay. But how, that's not going to lead anywhere.
No. It's not productive or helpful or kind, really, is it?
It's that classic, we all drive past the car accident.
Mm.
And that's why it's so often. I wish I was more strong in the sense to feel like I could call out that behavior, in whether it is in a public forum or in a private forum, to actually call out people and be like, actually, I didn't feel okay with what was said. Like if I saw that there, to be like, actually, this isn't okay, buddy. Like I think you should... If you've got some feedback, then give it to them directly. I don't know why you've posted it here. Something like that. I really wish, and I'm working to get to a stage like that, because, like I said, I used to be very generous with my time and all these things, and if you don't start to create those boundaries.
Yeah, I agree.
And you have to enforce them, and you shouldn't feel bad for enforcing them either. It doesn't make you a bad person, because you can be a bad person and good at your job and a good person and bad at your job, and sometimes we enter that space where we're always apologizing all the time, like, I'm really sorry, I'm sorry, it's going to be late, I'm really sorry. It's just like... No, you don't have to keep apologizing to other people for existing, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
You deserve to be here. You're allowed to take up space. You're allowed to want to do stand-up. You're allowed to want to do these things. It's not for me to tell you no.
Yeah.
Oh, true. I don't like it. It's just like, that's okay if you don't like it. Unsubscribe, unfollow. What are you doing?
Yeah,
don't
move go on back. To someone else. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Move on to the next door. There's hundreds of them.
Alexander, where can people find you on your socials?
I am all over it. Alexander Sacosta. I'm back on Instagram, much to my chagrin. Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and I have my website as well, alexandersacosta.com.
Excellent. And where are you next performing?
Where am I next performing? We're doing a recording of The Couch tomorrow. I have another musical coming up, hopefully this year. Can't really talk about it, but yes. And that's hopefully helping out with Telethon this year, which would be really
incredible.
Nice, because that's, once again, like, I like to dress up as superheroes at the hospital. They want me to. I don't just like turn up there. That sounded really weird.
Cool. I do love Telethon. We actually did a fundraising comedy on Wednesday for Telethon Kids Institute, and that was for their research for autism. It was awesome. They're a great lot of people.
And it's WA. Like, and once again, celebrate WA. Like, and it's not to be that nationalistic thing that we've seen we've got a reputation for now. To be like, we hate the other states because we don't. But like now we've noticed like there's so much talent here and so many people here. So it's like we can be that industry that we kind of were always very quick to, oh, and then you leave. That's how it works if you want to. I've been a big proponent of just like build it here. Like now we have these wonderful venues. You put on wonderful shows as well. You bring in new talent. It diversifies. It grows. From that, those people work together and then they're doing duo shows and then they're doing podcasts and doing all these things. That's how it grows. And let it grow, guys. Mm. Don't feel like we have to hold it. No, let it grow. WA.
I love that. What did you think about the new film studio that's proposed as well?
That's going to be fantastic when it gets built.
I know. Come on. That needs to happen fast, please.
Yes.
Because I think we're all excited for that space 100%. To happen. Especially, yeah, I'm with you. I do not want to see performers leave Perth when we can do it here. There's no reason why we can't.
And then we can finally have some of that mentorship that we long for.
Yeah, it's so good. We can leave it there because I think that's a really positive note to leave it on. Alexander, thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you for everyone for listening. You're listening to Bounce Back and I'm Yvonne Fletcher.